A number of years ago, my wife and I, along with two church member friends, had the opportunity to spend a week on the island of Aruba. We had taken a bump from a previous flight, and the airline offered us tickets to anywhere they flew. So we chose the furthest location, and that happened to be the island of Aruba, just 17 miles off the coast of Venezuela. We were there for about a week, and so we were there on a Sabbath. We had a very, very relaxing Sabbath, sunbathing on white sand beach that was just absolutely gorgeous with the blue Caribbean water, reading the Bible, doing a little bit of snorkeling, discussing things that we were reading. It really was a very enjoyable and a very refreshing Sabbath. But we did find ourselves wishing that there was a congregation and some brethren there on the island that we could fellowship, but that wasn't the case. Still, we enjoyed the Sabbath in what we did. It was either on trip home, I think it was on the trip home from that trip to Aruba, that I came across a magazine article in a magazine called Hemisphere. That was the magazine of American Airlines, I think American Airlines at that time, or United Airlines. They had, as many of the airlines used to have, their own in-house magazines that promoted various trips and locations, places to travel, and other articles as well. There was an article that caught my attention because it was titled Ancient Wisdom. And I took the magazine, which was free for the taking, and read through the entire article and found it quite fascinating. The article begins with this statement. If you and your family are drowning in a sea of to-do lists, try doing nothing for one day each week. The article was written by a lady, an author, who had formerly practiced the Jewish faith. She had an Orthodox Jewish understanding of the Sabbath. And so in the article, she approached the subject of the Sabbath from a different perspective than I had ever read anywhere before or that I had ever approached in sermons about the Sabbath. It was a very different perspective. So I found it quite interesting. In that article, she knowingly or unknowingly, shares a principle that I would refer to as the side benefits of keeping God's Sabbath holy. Side benefits of keeping God's Sabbath holy. And we understand and we generally believe that there are really two aspects of observing the Sabbath: physical, we rest, and spiritual. There are both spiritual and physical aspects of it. But this particular article, which I'll read in its entirety a little bit later, but the article discussed additional facets, some we may have thought about, some maybe we haven't thought about, maybe some we have experienced but haven't really reflected on them. These have to do with a mental and emotional state of mind and frame of mind that is part of what we learn from observing the Sabbath day, not just intellectually, but actually putting ourselves and immersing ourselves into the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a belief that we hold very deeply in God's church. We know it's one of our fundamental doctrines, perhaps one of the first things that caught our attention that we proved. We have many members who are in the Church of God because they did a search somewhere about Sabbath and looked for Sabbath-keeping churches. That's what my friend and I, when we came into the church back in 1969, that's how we began, driving around the city of Youngstown looking for Sabbath-keeping churches. It's a belief we hold very dear. And I think for us, and perhaps for you as well, much of the week, in a way, revolves around preparing for the Sabbath and looking forward to the Sabbath and getting ready for the Sabbath. Some of the beliefs that we hold very dear, we understand that the Sabbath has meaning for the future. We believe it's a picture of the millennium, a 7,000-year period, when Christ will reign on the earth. And the Sabbath is a picture of that. The Sabbath is also a symbol of eternal rest in God's kingdom. We find that in the book of Hebrews. And as much as anything else, for us, the Sabbath has become a way of life. It truly is a way of life. Christianity is a way of life. So is the Sabbath. And it pays some dividends in a way that maybe we haven't thought about it. So I want to look at the Sabbath from a physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, you know, point of view that we find both in the scriptures as well as in this article, again, that I found titled Ancient Wisdom, and see some of the possible side benefits that maybe we haven't thought about, but we've all experienced. Let's go all the way back to Genesis, Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. And we read the in the creation account in Genesis 2, verse 1 and 2. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Through the years, I've encountered some who argue against Sabbath, some who argue against the belief in God, who would make such remarks as, oh, was God tired? Was God overworked by creating? Kind of a sarcastic frame of mind. And they didn't understand the importance of what God just did in creating for 6 days. Laboring and doing all of his work in that time, and then stopping. From the time the sun would go down on the end of the sixth day to the end of the seventh day, God stopped and rested. It says he rested on the Sabbath day from his work which he had made. So we're told that God rested. We believe he did so to set an example for all mankind. And if the God of this universe, by this very act, has shown us something, it's the fact that when God rested, he really did rest. It says he rested. It means exactly what it says there. He wasn't tired. He's God. He didn't have to rest. He wasn't weary or worn out from creation, but he set us an example in a specific way by resting, which is important. Verse 3. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. So we believe, and we've come to understand, that the Sabbath is a gift that God has bestowed on mankind. And we're told first, we understand he rested, setting us an example. Second, he blessed the Sabbath. That word blessed from the Hebrew root word means to kneel as an act of adoration or worship. So we know that we don't worship the Sabbath, but on the Sabbath, we worship God. We come together to worship God by being here and reading his word, studying his word. It's an act of worship, the God who created these laws for our good. And third, we understand that God sanctified the Sabbath. That is, he established this day as holy time. Again, this isn't new to us. We know this is holy time, different from the other days of the week. And only God can make time holy. Only God can make certain days holy. People can worship God any day of the week they want, but there's only one day that God designated as holy, which we're commanded to worship him. So keeping the Sabbath, we know, is an act of worship. So holy that its desecration, to desecrate the Sabbath, was considered by God to be a great sin. It was considered to be sin. He put such emphasis on it and its importance in our lives, and our week revolves around the Sabbath, that he sanctified it and set it apart for mankind's good. And then he wrote or inspired Exodus 20 in verse 8. Exodus 20 in verse 8. The fourth commandment contained here, notice how it starts. Exodus 20 verse 8 reads, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Remembrance is an important part in the development of our relationship with God on the Sabbath day. Remembering, recalling the Sabbath, remembering how God has worked with us through the years. Remembrance, it's an important part of the relationship with God that we are developing through the Sabbath day. It's something we plan for. We plan ahead for the Sabbath. It's something that's imprinted on our minds. We reflect, we think about the Sabbath. We look forward to it. Hopefully we delight in it. We recall, we reminisce about it. I do that often, thinking about Sabbaths that I've experienced through the years when I first began keeping the Sabbath, and what I've learned about the Sabbath through the years. It becomes a part of our thinking. It just becomes very much a part of us. But mankind has forgotten much about what God taught him. So God says, remember, as it applies to the Sabbath, because most have forgotten the Sabbath and other things that God has taught. So God has to say, remember, when it comes to the Sabbath. Verse 9, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. Verse 9, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. It's interesting that there seem to be two aspects in this verse. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. I think that's to remind us how comprehensive this statement is. Two things are mentioned. One is labor, and the other is do all your work. And the way I understand it, or I've come to understand it, is we do a lot of labor when we're working at a particular job, our career. We labor all through the week at that. And then we have the other things we do that are our work. We come home and we take care of our home, we take care of our yard, our car, our family, hobbies, recreation, etc., all the things that we choose to do. God here says we should labor and do all of those things in 6 days and then rest on the Sabbath. So there's a principle here about removing ourselves from the labor of our job and from the other work we do, removing ourselves from those things. Of course, God intends that we replace with something else. As we remove ourselves from that, we put something else in place. And again, that has to do with our relationship with God. We read in verse 10 and 11, but the 7 day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, daughters, male servant, female servant, nor your cattle, or stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So here in verse 11, God hearkens back, the fourth commandment hearkens back to creation. When God blessed and hallowed the Sabbath as something important and good for all mankind, not just for one tribe of Israel, not just for one small group of people, but for all mankind. We'll come back to Exodus, but let's read those scriptures in Mark 2. Mark 2, verse 23 through 27. Notice that what's going on here. You're familiar with these verses. They are about the Sabbath and what Christ said about the Sabbath being for man and not just for one group of people. But Mark 2, verse 23. Now it happened that he went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. And as they went, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. And the Pharisees said to him, look what they do. Look, why do they do what is not lawful on the Sabbath? But he said to them, have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry, he and those with him? How he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest and ate the showbread, which is not lawful to eat except for the priest, and also gave some to those who were with him. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It was created for man, for man's benefits, as a blessing for man. But here, Christ is dealing with the problems of the Pharisees and some of their rituals. Here, the problem was trying to take care of the physical needs of his disciples as they were going through a field on the Sabbath day and they were hungry. But we learn here that there was no problem with what the Old Testament scriptures say compared to what he and the disciples were doing. Christ said, no, there's no conflict here. He wasn't violating the Sabbath, but some use this example and others to say that Christ, what he did on the Sabbath day, was breaking the Sabbath. In this case, or in healing, some said that, some try to say that he was breaking, violating the Sabbath, violating the scriptures by these actions. Instead, what Christ was showing was that there was a misuse of the Sabbath. There could be a misuse of the Sabbath, kind of boxing man in with regards to the Sabbath so strictly as the Pharisees did with some of their man-made detailed regulations. They boxed man in concerning the Sabbath so that man couldn't use the Sabbath as God intended for his good. It turned out to be almost a curse because they were so boxed in by these regulations that it wasn't for their good. Christ said the Sabbath was made for man. And we know that God intends this 24-hour period of time as a time for us, for human beings, to worship God, to be able to spend extra time building and strengthening our relationship with God, in addition to resting from our labor and our work, that we also enter into the Sabbath. We enter into the rest of the Sabbath with a certain attitude. And we also develop and grow in a certain attitude by keeping the Sabbath. So it's important that we enter into the Sabbath with a right frame of mind and attitude, and that through the years we develop, that attitude grows that we have toward the Sabbath because God created it for us, for man. And we use it as an opportunity to rest both physically and to grow spiritually. And that's what God has in mind. Let's go back to Exodus 23. Notice a word that is found here in relationship to the Sabbath. It really has a lot of meaning. And I think this is what we have found the Sabbath to be. I know I have. Sometimes the Sabbath for me can be tiring when traveling to two services or going over to Michigan and back. But I always find it to be this that's described here in Exodus 23 and verse 12. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. I think it's interesting, this word refreshed. It's an interesting word. It's from the Hebrew word, you're familiar with it, nephesh or nafash, which refers to a breathing creature, but literally, in this case, nafash, to breathe. To breathe, like someone who takes a deep breath, ooh, that felt good. You just take a deep breath. We all do that at various times. We're busy doing something, we thought, oh, I just need to stop and relax a little bit. And we just take a deep breath, just exhale long and slow, and it feels so good. We use the phrase, boy, that was like a breath of fresh air. With something that we've just done that it refreshes us. The word can also, in some translations, is translated re-spirited or new-souled or renewed. Not S-O-L-E-D, S-O-U-L-E-D, new-souled in that way, refreshed, re-spirited, renewed. Again, it literally means to breathe or to draw breath, and it's a relaxation concept. This word, refreshed, to have a change of pace that is so different from everything else we do that it allows us to relax, kind of like the men who gave your first speech in Spokesman Club, you remember that? You sat back down and went, whew, I'm glad that's over. You relaxed, and you were refreshed that it was done and behind you. Well, again, we know what that feels like. An ability to kind of have new life, to be revived. This word refreshed refers to all of that. And so the Sabbath day, as we observe it in all of its aspects, resting physically, drawing closer to God spiritually, spending time with God's word, fellowshipping, the Sabbath day in all of its aspects gives human beings the opportunity to have this spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical recharging, kind of recharging our batteries. And there are these basic spiritual principles in God's word so often have physical, mental, and emotional benefits as well. Let's look at a few. Let me just read an account, brief account. Some of you may remember the name Norman Cousins, or may be familiar with that name. He was the editor of Saturday Review magazine. He's written a number of books over the years. He was a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Biobehavioral Sciences in the School of Medicine at UCLA. He was the author of more than a dozen books. One in particular was quite interesting, a book called Anatomy of an Illness. He wrote about his own experience with a particular illness that he had, a quite serious illness, a crippling disease. Not sure exactly how to spell it. Looks like ankylosing spondylitis. He was given a 1 in 500 chance of full recovery. Some people become severely disabled from this disease as a result of the bones in their spine fusing in a fixed position and doing damage to hip and knee joints as well. Well, he developed this disease, and he was very active in his own treatment. Now, this is not a sermon about health, but there is a related principle. He was very active in treating his disease. He decided to decline pain-killing medication as well as other standard medications. He chose to do something else instead. He substituted what he called laughter treatment and various vitamins, plus an overwhelming will to live with spectacular results. His mobility returned. He was eventually able to get rid of the metal braces he wore on his knees and on his body, and he became virtually pain-free. His laughter treatment, again, you can read this in his book, Anatomy of an Illness. His laughter treatment involved watching hours on end of old candid camera television shows and other comedies, things that made him laugh, things that kind of lightened his spirit. Some years later, he had a heart attack, and he used the same treatment as part of his recovery. But the bigger thing was, by getting away from kind of the rat race of life, various stresses, watching things that made him laugh, reading things that lightened his mental state, that brought humor into his life, and, you know, doing the other physical things he did as far as various vitamins and things he took, he accomplished physical changes in his body. Hormones that promoted healing, he learned. Again, he was a professor of psychiatry and biobehavioral sciences in the School of Medicine. He took on a very different frame of mind, and it had a major impact on his body. It created a lot of physical benefits to his body. And again, this is not a sermon about healing, but the Sabbath can do a similar thing for us, not necessarily healing physical diseases, but there are physical benefits from obeying a spiritual principle, including the Sabbath, as it affects our attitude, our frame of mind, our mental state, as it affects all of that. How do we know that our mental state or attitude or frame of mind can affect us physically? Let's look at Proverbs 3, for example. Proverbs 3, and let's read in verse 5 through 8. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5 through 8. We're admonished and exhorted to trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. So a relationship with God. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. There seems to be some healing or physical benefit properties in fleeing evil, in not being wise in our own eyes, fearing God, acknowledging Him, trusting in Him with all of our heart, moving away from some of the worries of life that are upsetting to us, relaxing, putting ourselves and those situations that are out of our control in God's hands, we find here promotes health, is of benefit to our health. Putting certain things in God's hands can benefit our health mentally, emotionally, and physically. Whenever we can do that, good things can come from that. Likewise, the refreshing that the Sabbath gives us. There are those side benefits with the Sabbath as well. Turn a page over to Proverbs 4. Let's read in verse 20 through 22. My son, give attention to my words, incline your ear to my sayings, do not let them depart from your eyes, keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Health to all their flesh. Physical health can be affected by our attitude, by our mental state, by our frame of mind. Norman Cousins wrote an interesting description of something he saw happen in a hospital. He said, I was told at a convention of anesthesiologists of an episode at a southern hospital where they discovered a sudden outcropping of heart arrests under anesthesia. This was mystifying because the hospital had a very low record of fatalities in connection with anesthesia. The hospital tracked down the fatalities to two anesthesiologists and discovered that the patients were informed of the risks of anesthesia just before their surgery. Even though the patients were not conscious, their subconscious carried a terrible burden of apprehension that, in combination with the effects of the anesthesia, pushed the impact on the body beyond tolerable limits. I found that interesting. He went on to say, what you believe and feel, even subconsciously, can have an effect on your health. I remember when I had hip resurfacing surgery 15 years ago, they warned me about some of the side effects and anesthesia and those things, but long before the surgery, this was on an initial consultation and then a physical in preparation for the surgery, but none of that was said to me just before the surgery, for which I'm grateful. I just thought it was interesting an account of how we think and feel about certain things and the mental frame of mind, how it can affect our health. Again, this is not a sermon about health, but the Sabbath provides a renewing, a resoling, a recharging of the batteries. It gives us the ability, spiritually speaking, to spiritually draw a breath and relax spiritually by having extra time to spend with God in reading, in prayer, in study, in meditation. But there are also physical, mental, and emotional benefits as well related to observing the Sabbath. I think the statement in Luke 5, verse 16, you may recall this, where Christ seemed to often remind his disciples by his example of the need to rest, relax, get away from the stresses and pressures. Luke 5 and verse 16. So he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. It doesn't say, necessarily on the Sabbath. We know he kept the Sabbath. But we're told he often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. I think he understood the need to sometimes relax, get away from stresses and pressures. So he would go out in the wilderness to pray, let things settle down. It was a way to take a deep breath, mentally speaking, and let it out and relax. The Sabbath also helps us to do that. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 16. And you recall the account in Exodus chapter 16. Again, there's another principle here that we find. A part of the aspect of remembering the Sabbath is preparing. I saw this in action as a freshman in Ambassador College in Big Sandy, Texas. Very busy place. Classes all day long, every day. All the students worked, so we worked between, before, or after classes. There were social activities. It was very busy all through the week. But on Friday afternoon, things began to just slow down and quiet down. Friday afternoon, the equipment was put away. You know, the dinner prep was minimal, paper plates or plastic and plastic, you know, just minimal in preparation for the Sabbath to reduce the work. Also, I have at SEP in Orr, our summer camp in Orr, Minnesota, where we had 500 campers and staff, more than the population of the town of Orr. But on Friday afternoon, things just began to quiet down. Everything slowed down. We did things to be ready to prepare for the Sabbath, which is like what you do at home, to prepare for the Sabbath. Things just begin to slow down Friday afternoon, a significant change of pace that we go through on in preparation for the Sabbath, getting ready for it. But let's read in verses 22 and 23, the principle. And it was, so it was on the sixth day, that they gathered twice as much bread when God provided manna for them, miraculously fed them, as much bread, two omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said to them, this is what the Lord has said, tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. So they laid it up till morning, as Moses commanded. And it did not stink, nor were there any worms in it. Simply they prepared ahead of time for the Sabbath. They used the time approaching the Sabbath to prepare themselves, to get away from the things they normally did the other 6 days, as we try to do. We don't find here a long list of do's and don'ts, but an important principle, a principle of preparing for the Sabbath, gearing down physically, gearing up spiritually, slowing down mentally and relaxing and going into the Sabbath in a certain frame of mind, not rushed and hurried, but going to the Sabbath with a certain, you know, in that frame of mind of drawing closer to God. Verse 25, then Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day there will be none. So God taught them that principle of preparing and getting ready for the Sabbath in that way. And it was, again, God intended it as a blessing. Now let's go to Isaiah 58. Most often, I think when we turn to Isaiah 58, we think in terms of the scriptures that are there about fasting. And they are certainly there. The subject of fasting is discussed in Isaiah 58, but there's a parallel between what it says here about fasting and its benefits and the Sabbath and its benefits. There's a parallel. And verse 13 and 14 really discusses or magnifies the benefits of both of those. Although it's in the context of the Sabbath, let's read Isaiah 58, verse 13 and 14, and we'll come back through the rest of the chapter. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. I think it's important to view these verses as part of the whole context of Isaiah 58, and not separate from the rest of the chapter. Because in addressing the Sabbath, this chapter is describing a religious action, but also shows some of the benefits of the Sabbath in describing it, as it does in discussing fasting as well. Let's go back to verse 1 and notice, cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, tell my people their transgression and house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching God. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen? Why have we afflicted our souls and you take no notice? These and the following verses about fasting basically say the same thing as those last two verses we just read, verse 13 and 14. They say basically the same thing. That is, if one fasts correctly, there are benefits from fasting. If one keeps God's Sabbath as he intended, there are benefits from that as well. Verse 4 and 5. Indeed, you fast for strife and debate and to strike with the fists of wickedness. You will not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. Is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush and to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? That is, they were more inclined, even though fasting, to do their own will inwardly while looking outwardly as though they were fasting and, you know, intent on change. But inwardly, there really was no change. They missed the real purpose of fasting, the benefits of a spiritual fast. They missed that entirely. Verse 6 and 7, is this not the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out, when you see the naked, that you cover him and hide not yourself from your own flesh? Again, the broader perspective of fasting and what can come from it, God describes here. Verse 8 and 9. Then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, "Here I am." If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness. Side benefits. Healing is mentioned here. Certainly, in many ways, I think, healing of problems, healing of stress, of certain strife, maybe certain physical healing even that came from fasting, God's protection as well that they would have. Verse 10 and 11. If you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light shall dawn in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones. You shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. God would guide them and satisfy their lives in drought. You know, in times of trial and trouble, God would be there to help. He said that there would be good fruit physically and spiritually. Some very positive benefits from fasting in the right frame of mind and in a healthy attitude and change that accompanied that. God said there were some very great benefits. So then we look at verse 13 and 14. Let's look at those verses again. What does this mean in verse 13? If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, well, the verses, and we read verse 14, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth. Different translations for that, but it's talking also about benefits, about God's blessings as we observe his Sabbath day. Verse 13, another translation of verse 13 says this: if you turn your foot away from the Sabbath, from doing your business on my holy day, the New King James says, doing your pleasure. This translation, from doing your business on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and you honor it by not doing your own ways, by not seeking after your business, or speaking your own words. Look at that verse again. Turn away your foot from the Sabbath. Keeping one's foot on the Sabbath means to profane it, kind of walking all over the Sabbath or stepping on it, dishonoring it. On the other hand, to turn away the foot from the Sabbath, from doing one's business on the Sabbath in order to honor the Sabbath. We turn away our foot from the Sabbath in the sense that we don't walk all over it and disregard the holy time that it is, and that's our frame of mind about the Sabbath. It is holy time. It's God's holy time for our good and for our benefit. In other words, the Sabbath is holy ground. I mentioned up in Minneapolis a couple of weeks ago, having been there 4 or 5 years before that to speak on their regional weekend, that I've got a lot of friends there in the Twin Cities who are diehard Minnesota Vikings fans. And that particular Sabbath, when I got up on stage, there was an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper on the lectern that had the Viking logo, the helmeted Viking and the Minnesota Vikings logo. And underneath, in big, bold print, it said, "Please remove your shoes. You are on holy ground." Well, I didn't do that, but they considered it holy ground, and I had a lot of fun with that. But the Sabbath is holy ground. And those who are faithful to God, we keep ourselves on that holy ground, not trampling it with our foot. We stay on holy ground by following God's instructions about the Sabbath. And so that's the intent of that phrase, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath. The New King James says, from doing your pleasure. The more accurate translation is, from doing your business, your own business, your own work, the things that you decide. The English language, in English, it means gratification or diversion or enjoyment of the senses of the mind. But that's what pleasure means, but the more accurate translation is business. That is, the normal things we should be doing on the other 6 days of the week, we don't do on the Sabbath, seeking our own business. You know, the normal things that we usually do the other days of the week. And then it says, not doing your own ways, not doing your own ways. That's an interesting word. The Hebrew word derek, D-E-R-E-K, your own enterprise. The Hebrew emphasizes your ways versus God's ways. I thought that was an interesting understanding of that statement, your ways versus God's ways. In other words, we not only rest from our normal, regular human activities, we do that so that we can reflect more on God and God's ways. It gives us more time to do that, which hopefully we use that profitably that way. We restrain from what we normally do to give us time to do God's ways. So we get away from the work schedule, our job. We get away from the normal work around the house that we're involved in the other 6 days of the week so that we can have more time with God and more time with His Word. And time to fellowship and be with God's people and read from the Scriptures. So the Sabbath, as some claim, is not a burden. The Sabbath is to be a joy, a day of joy and delight. We delight in what God has for us on this day and what God promises can come from it physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. The end result, verse 14. Then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth. One translation says, on the heights of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. It's a way of saying that God blesses for observing His Sabbath in this way, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. As we delight in the Lord, He helps us to ride on the heights of the earth. That is, life is good. Life is so much better with the Sabbath, I have found, than without the Sabbath, when we delight in God's Sabbath. There is certainly a physical benefit to the Sabbath. There's physical rest. And of course, there's a great spiritual benefit, filling our mind with God's Word, having extra time for prayer, or catching up on reading some of those things and items of literature that we find especially interesting, that, you know, that we have such a great resource available to us that the church produces. All of those things It helps us to build and strengthen our relationship with God. It's a very valuable tool that way. But there are also emotional, physical, mental benefits as well, those side benefits of observing the Sabbath. I think as we think back on what a difference the Sabbath has made in our lives once we began observing the Sabbath faithfully, we can identify with many of these descriptions that the author of this article gave. And it may give us a few thoughts, you know, just going through the scriptures again and refreshing our minds about the Sabbath. Maybe it gives us a few thoughts about how we can improve our own Sabbath observance, how we can just maybe polish it up a bit if we haven't in a while, just to improve things a little bit and polish it up a bit. All of that to our benefit because, again, God created the Sabbath for us. There may be a few new things or a new approach that we can take, in polishing up the Sabbath a bit, in improving our Sabbath keeping, ultimately our relationship with God as we observe God's holy Sabbath day. Ancient wisdom filled with blessings and benefits.